Our next speaker, our final speaker of the afternoon, is Judith Orloff, MD. She's a psychiatrist in private practice and an assistant clinical professor of psychiatry at UCLA. She's author of several bestsellers, including Positive Energy, Dr. Judith Orloff's Guide to Intuitive Healing, and Second Sight. And she'll be talking today based on her book, Emotional Freedom, which will be for sale after the talk. Drawing on this book, she discusses how to harness the biology of emotions for health and healing. All emotional reactions trigger biological reactions that shape health just as distinctly as diet and exercise. She will discuss how when you change your emotional reaction to a situation, you change your biological reaction as well. Dr. Orloff.
Well, hello, everyone. This has been a long day for you, a really fascinating day. I want to talk about emotions and the effect the emotions have on the body. Because mind, body, spirit is all connected, it's impossible to talk about emotions, just the biology. You have to talk about everything that's connected. And I did my medical school training at USC, and I did my UCLA psychiatric residency training, and also at the VA Medical Center in Wadsworth, VA, I did a medical internship. And all during those 14 years of training, the word spirituality was never brought up. You know, I don't know how you all feel about this, but for me, in terms of my practice, it's very important to know a patient's spiritual belief systems in order to integrate that into the healing, into emotional healing. And there is no way to have an emotion without affecting your biology and also your spirit and your body. It's all connected. And so throughout the years, you know, my practice has been integrative in that I incorporate intuition, spirituality, biology, as a general kind of gestalt in appreciating emotions. That's when you have an emotion of any sort, most people don't know how to deal with them. They get thrown off. You feel fear, you feel anxiety, you feel frustration, you feel anger, and suddenly you're thrown off and you're in a reactive mode and your body switches into fight or flight response. So the amygdala signals the adrenal glands so that the neurochemicals, cortisol and adrenaline are surging through your system. And you don't know how, most people don't know how to bring that back down into the relaxation response to calm everything down before they react. And so they're basically operating pretty much like 50,000 years ago, the tiger in the jungle scenario, as opposed to evolving emotionally to a different paradigm of how to react that's more empowered and that's more discerning and more mindful. And that's what I'm talking about in this book, because when I was trained to understand the biology of emotions, and that if someone had a major depression, their serotonin was low, and I needed to give them a prescription for an antidepressant of some sort. I was the chief resident of the Affective Disorders Clinic at UCLA, and basically what people would do, they'd come in with very serious depressions or come in with bipolar disorder, come in with anxiety, and we would give them a prescription, you know, basically. And I do believe there is a role for medication at times, but I also believe that psychiatry has become a prescription mill and that we give out medication much too quickly without teaching people how to work with their own biology and their own chemistry and their own spirits to have some kind of balance within their system and mastery of what's going on. You see, so I think we've just gone the opposite route with our romance of the scientific. We need to come more back in the middle in terms of assessing patients and really individually assessing what each patient needs and not so readily prescribing a pill for everything. Even though there is a biochemical reaction to every emotion you have, we can learn to harness our own biology to a great degree. Certainly if somebody is going through a major depression and the serotonin is so low that no amount of meditation, no amount of exercise, no amount of diet, no amount of setting limits and boundaries with people around you will help. That is true, because major depression, there is extreme suffering. I don't know if any of you have experienced it or had patients or relatives or loved ones who have gone through a major depression, but there's an extreme amount of suffering with that. And when you put a rose up in front of somebody's eyes who's depressed, they cannot see the beauty in it. You know, there's a separation from any joy. And so a good portion of that is biochemical. And they need to get a little boost with their serotonin. So it's the most compassionate thing to do to prescribe medication in certain cases. But my objection is with emotions is that's all patients are given a lot of the time. They're not taught to work with themselves. They're not taught on medication now how also to learn other techniques, such as meditation, such as exercise, you know, such as setting limits and boundaries, such as connecting with something greater than the self in order to find something beyond the linear mind that's capable, that's there also. That they're not given any of these techniques, and so they become dependent on the medication, and the medication may stop working at a certain point, and then they have nothing. They have no resources. And so for me as a psychiatrist, you know, I see my job as helping people to be empowered and develop resources so they can leave therapy. You know, I don't see my job as seeing them for 10 years, 20 years down the line still talking about their childhood. I don't think so. It isn't how I work, and it's not what I support. I mean, I believe in returning again and again to the childhood in order to clear what's happened, but not to stay mired or enchanted there, because that's a disservice. It infantilizes people. And so it's important when you're working with emotions to deal with the whole person. And when a patient comes in to see me, I assess if they need medication, then so be it. A lot of people beat themselves up if they have medication because they feel that they've done something wrong, which is not true either. All right, but that is not the only answer. All right, so what I teach my patients and what I think is important for every human being to know is what happens during the biological stress response and take some action to reverse it, so that you don't feed it or fuel it, as most people fuel it. If they don't know how to work with the fear in themselves, then they're chronically in fight or flight on overdrive, burning their systems out, decreasing their immunity, leading unhappy, miserable lives because they haven't learned to work with their fears. All right, and so, you know, just as a summary, I have a diagram in this book. I hope you can all at least take a look at it, but it's what happens to your body during the fear response. You know, just very basic things you and your patients or anyone who is addicted to fear and hasn't learned to work with it needs to know. And it really speaks for itself. Because when you're afraid, chronically afraid or acutely afraid, your pupils dilate, you clench your jaw, your blood vessels constrict, you tense your shoulders, your heart races, your skin turns cold and clammy, your gut tightens, your stomach increases the production of gastric acid, and you can breathe more slowly, and your blood vessels constrict. So there you are, living like that. You know, if you don't work with your fear to bring it down and create the relaxation response, which is the exact opposite of the fear response, which elicits the endorphins in your system, which feels so good. And you want to have that self-soothing to know how to turn off your biology if it gets overactivated instead of letting it go, you know, day after day after day, which is what a lot of people do. And then they wonder why they feel chronically tired. And they start going to the doctor and getting diagnoses such as chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia. You know, and it gets to be a vicious cycle, and they start running from doctor to doctor. They have very expensive medical tests, and they find basically nothing, and then they send them to somebody like me, a psychiatrist, to put them on Prozac. But this is one reality in the medical system. It is, and if this is you, you know, I'm just telling you this so you could begin to reverse this, because it's a getting nowhere cycle. And if you find a psychiatrist who's willing to give you all this medication, you know, I don't think that all of you is being addressed, all right? So this is just as a warning. And so just as individuals, you know, I give my patients this diagram. And most of them don't know what happens during their fear response. They don't take responsibility or are accountable for what goes on in the body. You see, everybody must know. I mean, this isn't just the realm of physicians. You know, I feel very honored to have, you know, been able to be in anatomy lab, to be able to be in surgeries and see the heart beating and get a sense of how each organ and system works. It was a real honor for me to go through my training. But I think it's a mistake to think it's just in the realm of the scientists or physicians to know about the body. Now, it's important when people want to heal emotionally to know what goes on in their body and to know the repercussions of what certain emotions have on your body, the positive emotions, to know that just by laughing, you know, by just laughing at a joke, you'll have endorphins flowing. You know, by lightening up instead of being so intense all the time, and being too intense is a curse because it puts too much tension on your system. You know, just to be able to know certain simple little things, to exhale, to not hold your breath all the time, to just remember to exhale sometimes. You know, in Eastern philosophy, the breath is sacred prana. You know, it's sacred life force. And perhaps you don't like this vocabulary, I don't know. But whatever you want to call it, remember to breathe. Now, it doesn't matter the vocabulary that's put on it. It's just important for you to get to know your body. And I, now, as a psychiatrist, I educate my patients about their body. It's not typically what psychiatrists do, but, you know, just as human beings, it's our legacy to not live in the head up, you know, and not think we have something underneath, you know, from the neck down. You know, as human beings, we need to know we have this body, what we do in life, how we react to ourselves, what goes on in our own head emotionally, how we treat ourselves, how we treat others, and what we go through have biological repercussions in our system. And so I teach my patients to tune into this, to be aware of what happens in your body when you're around this person versus that person, to listen to the intuition and to catch the fight or flight response when it's going up instead of allowing it to go up and indulging that with the negative thoughts, because you can turn off the fight or flight response with your thoughts, with your attitude, if you train yourself to do that and to really make a commitment not to lead a fear-driven life. Now, this is the basis of the therapy that I do. It's hard, in a way, to recondition your mind not to be so fear-driven because our society is so inundated with fear everywhere you look. You know, but for emotional health, for brain health, you have to have a body and a brain that isn't run by fear. You must. Otherwise, you won't be happy. And you must know how to transform the fear and work with it, either psychologically, get to the roots of where that fear came from. Now, there's a spiritual teacher, Ram Dass. I don't know if you've ever heard of him. But he says, if you want to have a spiritual experience, just go spend a weekend with your family. It's true. It's true. Learn from that, though. Don't just look at it as torment. You know, learn from it. See where you get stuck. You know, see where, you know, you so don't want to be like your mother, but there you are exactly like your mother. See where you're connected without shame, without thinking about it in a negative way. Emotional freedom, as I'm describing it, is making a choice about how you respond as opposed to just reacting when your buttons get pushed. You know, for you to be the bigger person, or not waiting for the other person to make the change. For you to be the one to say, all right, I'm going to bring down my fight or flight response by taking this 3-minute break from this family dinner where I'm just about to explode. Go in the bathroom. I have a 3-minute meditation that I suggest that you practice just for 3 minutes. And I practice this all the time. All this I do in my life. I think there's a mistake, you know, in medicine and, you know, in many professions where there's the illusion that doctors don't go through the same exact things that everybody else goes through. But it's not true. You know, doctors are human beings. You know, and I work with everything everybody works with. And I think that's so important for everyone to know that we're all equal here. I mean, I might have a certain level of expertise in medicine, but that's, you know, you have your expertise in something else. But everybody goes through things. However, The real empowerment comes when you learn how to work with yourself, your own emotions. You learn how to transform what's negative within you day after day, year after year, as a lifelong process of healing. And then the magic happens is you can model something good for your patients. You're not just talking to them anymore. You're actually living what you're talking about, and this gets communicated. This is a powerful communication that you can give your patients when you embody what you're talking about. You know, it's easy to help somebody else. It's not so easy to help yourself. Much harder to help yourself. You see, but that's human nature. And so when you begin to work with your own emotions, I mean, how many of you are in the healing professions? I just wonder. Okay. All right, how many of you are scientists? Yes. Okay. How many of you are teachers? Oh, a lot of teachers. That's the healing profession. What's that?
Party giver.
A what? Party giver? That counts too. That counts too. But the thing is, when you begin to work with your own fears, your own anxieties, your own frustrations, and you begin to gain some kind of mastery over that, not only do you have the presence that you can impart to your patients or the people around you, the great thing is you get a lightness of being so that you can experience more joy. That's the whole point of all this. You know, as opposed to carrying around fears, resentments, angers that are justified. You know, maybe somebody betrayed you and you're justified, or your patients are talking to you, or your children or students are talking to you. You're justified. They did something to wrong you. But is that a reason to carry the resentment for the rest of your life and become bitter? Now, this is emotional freedom. This is a choice. Sure, you can go in that direction, but who wants to? You know, do you want to lead a bitter life because you're right? Most people would say yes. They would. They would say yes because they're right. And this is the biggest deterrent to healing in terms of dealing with anger, is the attachment to being right. It really is. It's really an eye-opener because you can notice it in yourself. You're right, and you want to hold on to that. But what negative effect does that have on your aging, your biology, the way you look? You know, I mean, if you're concerned about the way you look, if you hold on to anger and resentment, have you ever seen these people over a lifetime, what they look like? You know, pursed lips, you know, brows furrowed, hunched over, unhappy. Now, have you ever been to high school reunions and seen how people age differently? That's the proof. You see, but for me, you know, in terms of my own personal growth, I want to have a lightness of being as the years go by. I don't want to get heavier and crunched over. No, and I want to impart this to others because I think this is very valuable. You know, when you talk about healing, you talk about healing yourself first and foremost. And part of healing yourself emotionally is recognizing all the good that you've done. You know, a lot of people have this false humility, you know, where they don't want to admit what they've done. But part of healing is truly admitting, not in an egotistical way, what you have done, the goodness that you've spread, how you've helped others. This is something to recognize in the self because this is truly valuable. And part of emotional healing means recognizes all the positive changes that you've made in yourself, the small baby steps of progress, you know, not the big epiphanies, life-changing moments, you know. I've had it with those. And in my experience in medicine is those moments, you know, as illuminating as they can be, they're not the ones that usually hold. You know, it's the small steps in the right direction towards emotional healing that are the most powerful. And I hope you can recognize this in yourself and your patients and those around you in the family system. And maybe somebody's not changing fast enough for you. You know, just maybe. But they're making little changes. You have to recognize the value in that and not just leave. You know, people are very impatient. They leave. But if you can recognize that in yourself, that changes how your body feels. I mean, just your immunity. If you were to, let's say, cut your fear by 50%, let's say you were able to do that, and that's quite a bit, just notice the effect it has on your immunity, because just that will increase your immunity. You know, aside from all the other benefits in terms of how you will feel, look, and the amount you'll be able to give to others and enjoy your life. You see, so emotional freedom is walking in that direction. And that takes courage to me. And this is something I want to impart to my patients, the amount of courage this takes and how impressed I am, you know, when one can do this, you know, even a little bit. But you have to be able to talk to yourself in that way instead of being negative and beating yourself up and you haven't done enough and your mother says this, but you aren't living up to her. So what? Just move in a positive direction and be happy about it. And that has a huge effect on your body. Your body will be very happy with you if you can do that. As if you can take the stress off of what is going on in your body, and you could take a breath, and you could go for a walk, and you could do good, and you could laugh, and you could do something spontaneous instead of planned all the time, you know, and give yourself that. That will help your body to heal and be happy. And also part of emotional freedom and surrendering, you know, instead of clenching all the time, you know, part of, you know, what keeps people in emotional prisons is they clench and overstrive and push too hard. So they're just one big knot. All right. But with emotional freedom, there's a surrender or an acceptance to what life brings you, you'll deal with. You know, there's kind of an agreement you have with life. What life brings you, all of it is good in terms of helping you grow. It might be difficult, but all of it is good. This life is very precious. And not to forget that every single moment, not to overlook it, because this is the only moment we're going to have together. You know, this is it right now, and then it's gone. You see, but there's something very precious about that. And part of what I also stress, you know, in emotional freedom is seeing the big picture from birth until death, knowing that we're not going to be here forever, that there is a limited time that we have here. And I don't see this as morbid. I see this as very realistic, and it helps you appreciate what you have more. And it helps you make the most of what you have and not take for granted what you're given, you know, just because it's a little irritating or annoying or not going your way. You see? So that if you look at the big perspective, that to me is freedom. You know, it kind of scares people to do that because they don't want to look at their death. All right, that's another subject. It's another subject. It's something that one must look at, you know, and gain some peace with and acceptance. But what that does when you see the whole picture in terms of your emotions, in terms of your growth, in terms of the type of person you want to be and who you will become, and as you're becoming it, to be proud of that, it really puts things more in a perspective and to see things in a very positive way. And even if you go forward, you know, 3 steps and backward 5 steps, you know, or forward 7 steps and backward 3 steps, whatever. You keep moving forward. This is good. You know, the nature of the human being is that they always take the steps backward after the forward steps. It just happens. It's just part of the process. And so to have a lot of self-compassion with yourself, you know, emotional freedom means allowing your biology to settle at times, you know, finding those tranquil moments and letting them be and giving yourself that as a gift. So I see there are 2 people waiting for me. And I'm also speaking at 6 o'clock, too, if you'd like to stay for another talk. But there are some books out there that I could sign, and I'll be outside a little bit after this. So I'm glad to have completed your day-long conference.
Thank you. I want to... I bought Judith's book about a month ago, and I stayed up way too late for way too many nights in a row reading the whole thing. You know, there's a chapter about what is your emotional type, and which is fascinating. I mean, I have to tell you, I loved this book. I really think you should all get it. And we don't have enough copies for everybody, but we can order it and send it to you. It was absolutely wonderful. Thank you very much.
Okay, I'd like to thank all the speakers today, Patty James for arranging this. William Grant, Daniel Amen, Adam Gazelli, Phil Jacklin, Steve Fox, and Judith Orloff. And there's still books for sale in the lobby, and now this time the meeting is adjourned.